Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning to the voice of my life. How are you? This is Jeffrey Swartz. You love when I do that. I can tell you. I hear that laugh in the background. I love it. This is Jeffrey Swartz. I'm a professor of law at Cooley Law School's Tampa Bay campus. Usually I'm here with my colleague, Brendan Berry, who is also a professor of law at Cooley's Tampa Bay campus, but he is suffering from a dental issue. So he's having a hard time talking right now. So he's not here today, so you get a whole hour of me. Aren't you all excited about that? Okay, you get a whole hour of me together with Hezzy, and Hezzy's going to be, instead of sitting in the background and every once in a while chiming in a question, he's going to be asking a lot of questions today because he's going to be my colleague and my assistant. But before we start all of that, I have to say that everything that I say and everything that Brendan says when he's here are our comments and our opinions alone. They are not necessarily the opinions of Cooley's Law School's administration or its faculty at large or individually. And now I say good morning to my patron. Hi, Hezzy. How you doing?
Good morning. Good morning. What a pleasure. I was looking forward to Tuesdays. Now I'm looking forward. I'll have a little bit of discourse with you, which will be terrific.
Yes.
So thank you,
okay,
Jeffrey.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to it, too. Usually I start out talking about something that's funny, but to be honest, there's nothing funny in the world right now. Today is a very important day for a lot of reasons that we're going to talk about. But it's interesting, and I'm going to talk about Nikki for a little bit here. It's interesting that Nikki has gone on the attack recently, and it's no accident that she is talking about Donald Trump's mental health. And it really is a significant, the way he has been acting, that the pressures of all of his legal matters, including the E. Jean Carroll matter, which he's in the middle of trial of, that he claims he's going to testify at. I'm not holding my breath for that. But he is exhibiting the kind of stress that affects people that are older, some more than others, but clearly it's affecting his cognitive abilities. He literally doesn't know at times where he is. He can't remember, for example, all of a sudden Nikki Haley was the Speaker of the House and in charge of the House during 1-6. No, that was Nancy Pelosi. Okay, he still thinks that he's running against Barack Obama. He still thinks, I mean, this can go on and on. And these are not purposeful things he's saying. These are things because unless he's reading his teleprompter, he can't remember things. He literally can't remember. Now, I know we'll get back that, well, look at Brandon, okay, you know, Biden. Look at Brandon.
Yeah.
You know, he stumbles over his words. Well, he's got an excuse. He has always stumbled over his words. He doesn't misspeak. He has stumbled over his words because he has a stutter. That's different. But everybody that's around him, as President of the United States, says this guy has a mind like it's like a steel trap. Everything goes in. It stays in. He is leading the conversations on national security issues. He's asking all the right questions. He's making all the right decisions. And people have to start recognizing, yes, he is older. Yes, he's in his 80s. But you know what? Somewhere along the line, people have to understand that maybe older people slow down. But you know what? They're wise. You find the wise ones. The people that know what they're talking about and understand issues like a chessboard instead of playing checkers. And that's the way it is. Donald Trump is playing checkers. Joe Biden plays chess. And he understands that world politics is just that. Now, commenting on Donald Trump's mental issues, okay, is appropriate because he is a public figure. If he weren't a public figure, it would be an invasion of his privacy to disclose those issues or the treatment that he is receiving. That's just wrong. And so as a result of which, That does not apply to Donald when people say you shouldn't be talking about those things. Donald places his mental health an issue before the public, and it's appropriate to comment on it. So it's not the same as commenting on, you know, some private citizen and saying things about that. That's just wrong, okay? And you shouldn't do things like that. So I just wanted to talk about his mental health, and I wanted to answer the people who say that, you know, you don't have the right to talk about his cognitive abilities. Okay, so that's why I wanted to open the show. That's a matter of what I think and what I think about that. So there you go, Hezzy. I started the show all by myself.
Well, I think that's a great beginning, and but it does go to the issue of the former president. He's running for re-election. He's like a cult figure, and he can seemingly do no wrong among his followers. It's like they're in lockstep with him. And I don't think they're thinking it out as lucid as
you
do.
Well, they're thinking. They're thinking, but they're not thinking it out. It was interesting that a guy by the name of Lukovich, you know, normally he draws cartoons. But he is a political commentator and a sports guy, actually. That's where he started. He was on Morning Joe this morning, and I was listening, and he basically said, you know, they were talking about what would happen to the Republican Party if Donald Trump wasn't there. And some people said, well, there's guys out there that want to replace him, people like Gates and others who want to step into the breach and be the guy that leads the new Republican Party. And Lukovich said, you know, you cannot underestimate the singularity of the Republican Party as it surrounds Donald Trump. And if the singularity is not there, then the force of gravity that pulls people in, like a singularity does, you know, we're talking about astronomy here.
Yeah.
You take that singularity away, and the cohesiveness that is basically the Republican Party right now would disappear. And that it may cause the Republican Party to implode and disintegrate. And that also would be a bad thing. I'm not a Republican, obviously. But we need the Republican Party. The old Republican Party had a purpose. This Republican Party is destructive. And so destroying the singularity, the gravity that holds them together, I don't think anybody can step into that breach and be Donald Trump. And so I don't know at this point whether people are thinking. I don't think they're thinking at all, okay? Most MAGA Republicans, as bright as they may be learned-wise, really are people who just don't think. They are people who are following a call to personality, that somehow either they do think and they want to destroy this country, or they do think and they're only concerned about their own pocketbooks, the things that they have, okay, and believe that they're better than everybody else and know better than everybody else, and that, in fact, they only concern themselves with their own selfish needs. That's true. So they do think. The people who don't think are the uneducated people who do not understand the import of what's coming out of his mouth, because they don't have the education and the knowledge of history and the knowledge of this country and what it really stands for. They see it as standing for their gun rights. That's all they care about. Okay, or they stand for this country as a religiously dominated country that is anti-abortion, even though 70% of the people in this country are not anti-abortion, at least not on a public policy basis. So that's the way I kind of look at it, Hezzy. I don't think they're stupid.
No, I don't think anyone is stupid, and there are different definitions of what you would regard someone who's ignorant of one thing or another. But how is it that we've come to this point in our discourse? It wasn't like this in the 60s or in the 70s. I didn't realize that.
Oh, it was. You don't remember the 60s and 70s. I remember the 60s and 70s. We were so divided in the mid to late 60s over the Vietnam War. And I remember the 1968 Democratic Convention. I remember it. I really do. Okay? So we were unbelievably divided in the 60s. We really were. And so we went through those things. You know, the riots in the streets. Black Americans were basically fighting for their rights. We were divided. North and South, we were divided. But we overcame it, and we choose to do it at because it's about the country. Okay? That's the bottom line. It really is about the country. And that's what we've lost. The ability to understand that we disagree, but it's still about the country. And we don't do that anymore. It's about my tribe, solely about my tribe. So it will be interesting.
Why is the Trump tribe, why do they feel, I guess, put upon or marginalized, and that they feel that only
because
Trump can give them
years.
Voice?
Those people that support him, that really support him, okay?
Yeah.
Really, you know, the deep red MAGA people who are not in it for the joy of fighting with people in a bar or converting people who they consider to be liberal to be MAGAs, okay? It's a different thought process, okay? And they think about things differently. So whatever it may be, okay, they just don't. We are divided. We are divided on religious grounds. We are divided on abortion grounds. We are divided on taxing. We're divided on guns. And there is a lack of ability to compromise. And the real destruction of the operational Congress was when we did away with earmarks. When I couldn't trade a vote for your bridge if you give me a vote for my federal building. And that's how the sausage was made. Now no sausage is made. Everybody takes their slab of meat and puts it on the table and says, my slab of meat's better than your slab of meat. So I want you to pass my slab of meat. And that essentially is what's happening in Congress now. No one can trade anything off. No one compromises. Compromise is a bad word. And so we will stay divided like North and South in the 1800s until there's a compromise, and even the compromise, Missouri Compromise, didn't work. Okay? It's like Donald Trump said, he could settle the Civil War by making a deal. He doesn't understand in 1850 the North and South made a deal over slavery. It was called the Missouri Compromise. And we still ended up in the Civil War. So that's kind of that kind of thing. I want to talk
so
about...
So is there a way to
Ron
move...
DeSantis. Can we? Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead. Ask your question. But
is there a way to reach a point of civility among our people? Or are we so divided now that it's literally an aberration of our history?
No, it is possible, and I'll give you an example. I know, you know, through Maryland I met some people, and one of them was a big MAGA guy. And he really disliked me because I was a Democrat. And there was an event that I went to that I ran into him, and we didn't get into anything. We kind of teased each other a little bit one day, and then the next day, with very appropriately a fence between us, okay, we started talking to each other, and we smiled, said it's great to see you, and all of a sudden it was okay. There was no fighting, there was no anger. He knew who I was, I knew who he was, and it was wonderful, and it was really a nice moment. And it lasted until that event ended, which was a few days later. And then I haven't seen him since, but that's not the point. It is possible to do this. But the problem is that MAGA Republicans have been bred. They have been urged to fight, because they have been marginalized. Their thought process, their political thought process has been suppressed for so long, because the American people didn't want their thought process. But now they sense that they can accomplish what they want. They can destroy the Constitution. They can establish a dictatorship. They think they're going to get to keep their guns. Boy, that's delusional. And they think that everything else would be the same except for one guy is going to make all the decisions. They don't understand what is going to happen to this country, and the rights that they take for granted and don't think about will be taken away from them. And they don't want to hear it. And the rich ones don't care. The rich ones figure, I've got my money, I'll be able to, yeah, money will talk.
Yeah.
So that's so they don't care. And if the middle class disappears, so be it. If there's the oligarchs and there is the worker bees, that's fine. Because the oligarchs, the rich people, don't care about the average person. They really don't care.
Yeah.
They're just a mechanism to make more money. So that's why we can't come together until people are educated to understand the things that are happening and the risks that they are taking, all for the sake of they like the way a guy talks. They like the way he makes fun of people. They like the way he makes up names for them. He likes the way he talks about dictators, okay? That's until we educate people that that's not a good thing, that's a bad thing, then we have a problem. It's just that simple. I'd like to talk about Ron DeSantis, okay? I'm not going to use a funny name for him. I don't pick on people. I don't kick people when they're down. We're not going to kick him when he's down, okay, because he is as down low as they get, okay? This guy blew through $150 million. $150 million because he didn't want to do retail politics in Iowa. He wanted to fly wherever he went on a private jet. Okay, in my day, until you had enough money to have your own airplane, you flew commercial like everybody else.
Yeah.
Even though you were a candidate for president of the United States. Now they fly around on small private jets, or they have a big jet, and they traipse people around, and they pay. They have staff that sucks down money like a person sucking down a McDonald's milkshake, okay? And this is what they do. And this is what happened to Ron DeSantis. He lost grasp with reality. If he was going to take on Donald Trump, he had to take on Donald Trump. All of them failed. Because they did not take on Donald Trump. When those indictments came down, Donald Trump, despite all the money he was raising, was vulnerable. They should have gone after him. And nobody ever did. They could have beat the ever-living you-know-what out of him. Day after day after day of people just diminishing him and attacking him. You can do it. You can fight back against one person. You can't fight back against seven or eight. Not if they're all doing the same thing, going after him. But they all wanted to be nice to him. And I still think that Ron DeSantis blew $150 million trying to become the front runner in 2028. Problem is, I don't know if we're going to have an election in 2028, because if Donald Trump wins, there won't be any more elections. There just won't be. And so, I don't know what they're running for when they endorse this guy. Now, he withdrew. I don't know if you remember. I wish that Brendan was here, because he does.
Right.
I predicted back in July or August of last year that Ron DeSantis would not make it past the New Hampshire primary. The way he was going through money and the way his numbers were dropping, he would never make it past New Hampshire. So I'm going to pat myself on the back and say, I kind of pulled that one off, didn't I? Okay.
Yeah, you did.
So what went wrong for him is very simple. He's a lousy politician. People don't like him. Despite the fact that it's the name that Donald Trump gave him, he is sanctimonious. He is self-righteous. He is so drawn to the far right evangelicals that he thought by doing that and being that evangelical guy that he could draw those people away from Donald Trump. That was wrong. Donald Trump produced what they wanted. He produced the Roe v. Wade overrule in Dobbs. He produced what he promised he would produce. And you notice that Mitch McConnell is not standing up and saying, hey, that was all me. Okay. I got you that sixth vote. It's all me. Okay. He's not doing that because he knows that's a death knell for his senators. So he's not doing that. Donald Trump is saying that it was all me. I did this all for you, and I'm going to do more for you evangelicals. He is the Antichrist to some evangelicals that is necessary for the rapture to begin. God created bad people to bring about the apocalypse. And there are evangelicals who are deeply involved and want Donald Trump because they want the rapture to come. What's going on now is he's going to return to Florida, much to our many people's chagrin and much to the detriment of the state of Florida. He opened the Florida legislative session last week with his State of the State address. He talked about no policy. He talked about no new things that he wanted to accomplish other than the things that everybody knew he would talk about was his insurance and hurricane preparedness and all kinds of stuff. What this means to Floridians, I'm not quite sure. I don't know where he goes now. Will he continue fighting his culture wars? More likely than not, he will. But what really is going to happen, and I think I've said this before, and now there are people who actually are saying it, you know, on the big networks, is that his intention is to come back to Florida. He has a legislature that does whatever he tells them to do. He is a dictator in the state of Florida. And he's going to tell them, I want you to pass a law or a constitutional amendment to put on the ballot in November to change the term limits in Florida from 2 terms as governor to 3 terms as governor. He wants to stay governor. And he wants to stay governor, and he has to run for re-election in 26 if he can get this passed. Otherwise, he's termed out. If he's out and he has no office and he is such an utter failure in running for president, there's no way in 28 he makes a political comeback to the presidency. Isn't going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
He needs to stay as governor of the state of Florida. So get that third term and brag as he's running for president that, hey, the state of Florida changed the rules because they wanted to keep me. Because the state, the elector, the people who vote, okay, the public, has to pass this constitutional amendment in November when all the Republicans are out voting for Donald Trump. So he needs Donald Trump's endorsement of that, which is why he gave his endorsement yesterday to Donald Trump.
Yeah.
He needs that. He gets that third term. He says, they love me so much. I can do this for the country. Okay, and I'm still governor. Look at 12 years I'm going to get here. Okay, more than a decade. And that's how he will run for president of the United States in 2028, assuming there is an election in 2028. And to a degree, he's voting. He's counting on Trump losing. Because then it's real clear. Trump will claim, I read my term limits differently. I can have up to 10 years. Even though it says 2 full terms or 10 years total, okay, that's the way it reads, he's going to find some way to get the Supreme Court to read it differently and allow him to stay in for 10 years, and then we'll have an election when he hits 10 years. Okay, and you'll elect my son. Okay, you know, that type of thing. And he'll be, what, 85 at that point, assuming he's still around and doesn't drop over. But this constitutional amendment will affect the constitutional amendment that is going to be on the ballot for abortion, because there's one actually getting ready to be proposed right now. Okay, so that will be affected. His war on woke by asking for even more constitutional amendments dealing with other issues he will put forth. And so his endorsement means a lot for Trump. it lowers it down to one person. And that brings us to, if you've got some questions about this, I'm more than happy to answer some. Okay, but that's what DeSantis means to the future of the state of Florida. DeSantis
but where is
the only thing that could pop. What?
Go finish your thought.
What?
Finish your thought. I was just wondering, where are the voices of civility and discourse, and how have they been eclipsed by these voices that don't speak to the public interest? They speak to their interest, just to commandeer power, and they're doing a good job.
And that's the purpose. And they're doing a good job. They're loud. They're constant.
Yeah.
They do things to draw attention to themselves, and they don't worry about the fallout because they'll just come up with something new to say the next day that puts that other bad thing out of the public discourse. And it's hard for the media to be able to decipher that which is distraction and that which is real. So they report on both.
But the media is the one that has been commandeered. Look at, Fox News. They become the channel for the cult, the cult that is now thriving. But you don't see discourse. You only hear opinion. And people don't seem to recognize. Sorry?
It's called being in a silo. No, I'm sorry. Silo talk. Okay, they're caught in a silo. We used to say you're caught in a bubble. But what you are is a missile of misinformation in a silo, waiting to be blasted into space. Okay, and that's what they do. They're caught in that silo. Nothing gets in the top. Nothing gets in the sides. You are there being inundated by whatever silo you're in, okay, blasting whatever they want to tell you. And you are so protected that you don't allow anything in. This is how propaganda works. They're constant. They are every moment of the day there's something new. When they find something that really touches people, they pound on it over and over and over again. That's how propaganda works. So that no real facts or news get in. And that's kind of the way that it works, and this is what's happening.
And media has been stolen along the way. So many very powerful media outlets that just espouse, the dogma, and I don't know. They've lost all semblance of a reality as a media outlet, and people don't seem to recognize the difference between opinion and fact.
They don't. And the truth of the matter is that the more you pound opinion as being fact, the more those people want it because of the personalities that give it to them and the way that it is presented. Okay, let's just look at reality. World War II. Joseph Goebbels is able to convince the German people that they were winning the war until the bombs started falling on Berlin. And then all of a sudden he kept saying, we're powerful. We have new weapons. We're going to win this war. Are you ready for all-out war? Okay. This is the way he sold it to people, and they accepted that because they weren't getting anything else coming in. Nobody was telling them that the Allies and the Russians were building massive forces that they could never stop. That the Germans could never stop this assault on their fatherland. And so as a result of which, they became convinced of the reality of what they were being told. This is no different than the people who are in the silos here. They are convinced of the righteousness because they don't get real facts. They don't make real decisions. They have become sheep that just follow.
So has media,
where they are told
so
to
has
go.
Media fallen into a rut where they believe that by aligning themselves with opinion rather than fact, they can control the I guess the arena, and they control
right.
the dogma, and they're comfortable with it. Eventually, if it dissipates, they'll switch sides, or they'll go to a different level.
I can't disagree with you. I can't disagree yeah. with you on that. I have to say that it is true that even the fact-based outlets are trying to countermand the opinion of One America or Fox, okay, who are the big ones, that they're trying to out-opinion them.
Uh-huh.
And instead of really just sitting there pounding the facts, you know, be Joe Friday, the facts, man, nothing but the facts, okay, without constantly presenting panels of talking heads that are trying to out-opinion each other and out-opinion the other outlets, they get lost. And so, for example, people who watch Fox say, CNN's no better, MSNBC's no better. I like what uh-huh. I hear on Fox better than what I hear on MSNBC or on CNN. And even the network news outlets that come on at 6:30 at night that used to be the powerhouse that gave people facts.
Yeah.
The depth of that, believe it or not, was an editorial back in 1968 from Walter Cronkite because he was the most trusted man in America. And he went on the air and said, the Vietnam War has to end. We're losing people. We aren't going to win. We have to end the Vietnam War. And that was the death knell for Lyndon Johnson's presidency. And it was encouraging that turned the public, not a minority of the public, the majority of the public, against the Vietnam War. That one editorial in 1968 was the beginning of the end of what we call fact-based network news. The only person, in my opinion, that comes close to doing that on network news is Nora O'Donnell with CBS. Her half-hour broadcast is so factually based. Very little opinion comes out of it. But NBC puts on opinion. ABC puts on opinion. Okay, I think that Dave Weir tries to be fact-based, but opinions come flying out of his reporters left and right. So we have lost that edge of fact-based opinion. And the truth of the matter is that it was fact-based on television before because every town, every city had a newspaper. People read the newspaper. They got their news and their facts from the newspaper. Even Toledo, Ohio, where I grew up, had two papers. The Toledo Times came out in the morning and was on your doorstep when you woke up to drink your coffee. And the Toledo Blade, which came in the evening, so you had a paper to read after you ate your dinner. And they never agreed on anything. There was fact and there was opinion. They wrote opinion. Their opinions were based on the same facts, though. They just reached different conclusions on policies that were instituted by that. And so you got both sides, and you had a chance, fact-based opinion, for you to make your own opinion. So one cannot understand. I'm sorry about the buzzing in the background. I'm in my building, and they're doing work here. So that's where we lost it, starting in 68. With Walter Cronkite on his national broadcast, and that's why this mess has been created. And I agree with you, the media, especially the honest media, and that is not Fox News, and it is not One America, the people who talk about facts, okay, cannot compete on an opinion basis. They have to just keep pounding the facts and pounding the facts and pounding the facts and making people listen. Newspaper has to pound the facts and make people read. Otherwise, honestly, the democracy is doomed. It's that simple. So I wanted to talk about New Hampshire, just on one point. I'll talk about Nikki later.
Okay.
This New Hampshire vote that's going to take place today is important for a lot of reasons, because it is more than likely that Trump is going to roll up a big win against Nikki Haley, and Nikki Haley cannot find a reason to continue, because she's not even going to win her home state of South Carolina. She can't. I mean, they love Donald that much that they will throw Nikki. And Nikki's not that popular anyway, ever since she made them put the Confederate flag away. Okay? So she's not going to win there. And she's going to run dry of money, and people are going to say this is a wasted effort. So in essence, I believe that that sometime after New Hampshire, if she loses, and she's more than likely going to lose big, okay, she is also going to have to suspend. And that makes Donald Trump presumptive Republican nominee. Okay. Now, what does that mean in a practical sense, beyond that he will be the nominee of the Republican Party? It affects the federal case against him in the District of Columbia. The federal circuit that is pending an opinion on his immunity claim, I think being aware that today was the New Hampshire primary, has chosen to wait till tomorrow or Thursday to release their opinion. I am confident that opinion is going to reject his claims of absolute immunity because he was president of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And further, it will read much like the opinion that came out of the 11th Circuit overruling Mark Meadows' claim of immunity because from basically the same grounds. I have immunity because I was doing things that I was told to do by the President of the United States who had absolute immunity. And so it passes on to me. That is essentially, okay, what's going to occur. Now, why is that important? You ask. I have an answer. Okay? It's important because if those two opinions are in harmony with each other, read as if they were written by the same person. It is, in my opinion, highly unlikely that the Supreme Court is going to jump in and rule on this immunity issue. They can say we basically reject it because we've ruled on this enough. We know that that immunity does not exist. It didn't exist for Nixon. It did not exist for Clinton. And it doesn't exist for Trump. And it didn't really exist for Reagan either. Reagan could have been charged, but wasn't because, you know, he was suffering from Alzheimer's all through his second term and finally disclosed it and let his hair go gray. It is one of those things where the problem that we run into is once that opinion comes down, the claim by Trump and his lawyers will be he is the presumptive nominee of the Republican Party, and as a result of which, he should not be prosecuted. This should be decided by the voters. This is election interference, and that'll be his claim. Now, the way that the circuit does this, and I'm hoping they will, they can force a very quick decision on a petition for certiorari with the Supreme Court on the issue. Okay, by setting aside the stay, okay, in that case, of proceeding with motions and discovery and all that kind of stuff. Okay? Okay, are you okay? You all right?
I am. Okay. Still suffering some congestion. That's okay.
Okay, all right. Okay, I'm just concerned about you.
I appreciate that.
My
thanks.
Feeling is, you're welcome. It's one of those things where if the circuit does the right thing, and this is how they can pull this trigger, they lift the stay. That means that the case can now proceed with all of the motions and discovery and preparing for trial, okay, which Donald's people have been claiming they shouldn't be forced to prepare for trial, and Jack Smith filing all of his motions, pretrial motions, and sending them discovery, okay, and filing that discovery is complete is a violation of her order of the stay. And Chunkin this week or last week said, no, it's not. You should be continuing to do those things. I'm just not going to proceed with anything in court. But you should be getting ready for trial. Okay. The truth of the matter is that if that stay is lifted, the only way that it gets put back in place is by going to the Supreme Court and asking for them to reinstate the stay to give them time to file a motion for cert. If the Supreme Court denies that stay, and this is the easy way to get out of this, denies that stay, then it's nonsensical to file a motion for cert because it's not going to be granted. And I believe it wouldn't be granted anyway. They're going to decide this other presidential case, probably in favor of Trump, okay, keeping him on the ballot in the states that he's been taken off. They cannot now put their thumb on the scale on the litigation that's pending. So they got to choose which one they're going to rule on. They've already decided they're going to rule on the states that have taken him off the ballot. So I think they're looking for an excuse and a way to deny cert and allow the trial to go forward and basically say, come back and see us if you're convicted. And then we'll probably take the case on. But we're not going to do it now. Mm-hmm. If that happens, that case in Washington will start by the third or fourth week of March. He will be a convicted felon by the second week of May, presumptive or not. And now Chunkin has to do what she needs to do. And that is, first, revoke Donald's bond as a flight risk. How do you let him get on his own airplane and fly to Florida with a baseline guideline sentence of somewhere between 8 and 10 years without any enhancements, which he would get?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the violation of the public trust alone is worth a 4-level increase. So he's looking at dying in prison. What makes you think the plane is going to land in Florida? What makes you think that he doesn't think that he can go to some foreign country and do internet hookups and campaign through the internet, doing rallies on the internet? You know, big rally with a big screen with Donald from Honduras, okay? What makes you think he wouldn't do that? And then if he won, he could come back as this triumphant guy, land in Washington on his plane and say, I'm now president of the United States, okay? So Chunkin needs to have a handle on him, and that's the only way to do it is to revoke his bond and put him in jail, okay? And she has the opportunity, once the verdict is entered, to sua sponte. That means, for those of you who aren't lawyers, on her own motion, declare that he is an insurrectionist and ineligible under Section 3, Article of the 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution. Those two things happen upon a conviction, he's finished. And the Republican Party, in my opinion, having chopped off the head of the snake, will disintegrate into bitter, bitter divisions that will make it impossible for them to win any election anywhere. Now, this can happen. I believe that it can happen. I think it will happen. But we have to make sure that the Circuit Court of Appeals in D.C. does their job. Okay? So it's very important that tomorrow or Thursday this circuit opinion will come out. And it will be interesting to put it side by side with the Meadows opinion that came out of the 11th Circuit to see just how closely aligned they are, that can force there being no controversy between the circuits. It gives the Supreme Court the ability to say, we are not going to handle this pretrial. These motions have been ruled upon. They are correct. That's the end of it. We're not granting cert. So the D.C. Circuit has to do something to force them to move quickly. Otherwise, it could be 30 days before they file their petition. Okay? Are you really okay?
Yeah, I am. I'm fine. Thank you. Really,
drink some
water.
Do something. Put something down your throat. Okay? All right.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Okay.
I've got it right in front of me.
Okay. Okay. That is the effect of New Hampshire on that. Now, what is happening in the D.C. case underneath this circuit is that there was a stay on the case, as I mentioned, that was entered by Chunkin. As I said, Jack Smith has continued his work when I was a lawyer, the one thing that would people would say about me was that I was relentless. I kept going. No matter what, I kept going.
Mm-hmm.
And when we would have a verbal agreement or even a letter agreement of a settlement, I kept going. And I would get calls from the lawyer. Says, we settled the case. I said, do I have the check? When I get the check, when I get a real settlement agreement, okay, and when you get that, that's when I enter my notice of dismissal, and that's when I stop. But I don't stop before that. So I'm not going to wait 6 months for the check and be told, well, wait a minute, there's a problem, we're not settled. That's not the way I play this game.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so this is something that Jack Smith has been doing. He is filing notices of tendering discovery. He is filing notices of completion of discovery. He's filing motions in limine. He's filing other evidentiary motions. He's filing other substantive motions. He's doing and setting up Chunkin, who has these motions, some of which will need a hearing, some which will not. And those that do not require a hearing, I can guarantee you, even as we're speaking right now, her clerks are preparing what we call omnibus motions on motions on omnibus orders, so that when the stay is gone and things can move forward, she's going to give Trump's people a week to respond to all of these motions. And then she's going to rule, because she already knows what she's going to do. In federal court, there does not have to be a hearing on every motion. That's not required. In state court, we do that because there's such a volume of cases that judges rarely have an opportunity to read the motions before a day of a hearing. And then they skim through them, and they listen to oral argument, and they make a ruling. In federal court, only the most important of motions get hearings, things like motions to suppress, where they're evidentiary in nature. Those get hearings. But on legal issues, admissibility issues, no. Most of the time, it's briefed by the parties, and the judge issues a ruling. So I see possibly within a week, 10 days after the stay is lifted, Chunkin will issue this omnibus order on all these motions, which are not appealable, pretrial, and she's going to push this case to trial very quickly. I think that at this point, Chunkin is doing whatever she can to keep this case on track, but she was required to issue a stay on the immunity issue. So once that is decided, I think she's going to move as quickly as she can, knowing the import of getting this case to trial by the end of March. And I think she is intent upon that, and I think Trump's people know that she's intent upon it. And even though he will be the presumptive nominee, they're not going to stop her. And the court of, and they'll ask for a stay. They'll go to the third. They'll go to the D.C. Circuit and claim you should stay these proceedings. This is election interference, and they're going to say no. He's a defendant in a criminal case. Judge wants to go to trial. You're going to trial. They'll say, but even the Department of Justice says we don't do things to interfere. Well, that's in the last 30 to 60 days before the general election. General election's in November. If you're not in trial by September, come and see me. Okay? That's kind of the process. So that's kind of that. I think going back to New Hampshire, by the way, because I want to circle back to that. She's going to get her ass. Excuse me. I got to say this in a nice way. She is going to get wiped up on the. She's going to be. They're going to use her to wipe the floor. He most probably. I don't think she can get 35%. Maybe. I think he's going to end up with closer to 60%. I mean Trump. And that is really going to end Nikki Haley's bid for the presidency. And I just don't see her going to New Hampshire. I don't think she can concede New Hampshire, her home state, is going to vote against her. But to the same extent, she can't go there and fight him. She doesn't have the ability. Now, there's a lot of time. I think it's a month until the New Hampshire primary. and something I think she'll hang around as a candidate. But there's very little she can do. She might raise some money, but she's not going to be able to compete. Not with everybody, including most of the Republicans in the United States Senate, endorsing him, including Rick Scott, who's a guy I'm going to be really happy to see get beaten this fall. I think that really could happen. And so we'll see what happens with that. Now, on the legal front, I have one thing I want to talk about. There was an oral argument last week dealing with the Chevron case, which we've talked about before, which deals with the ability of administrative agencies to have their own, basically, courts or hearings to determine whether, in fact, there have been violations of their mandate, or there have been violations of the things that they have set forth rules upon, which others claim always should be a matter of statute and endorsement through the courts. They know the courts don't have the capacity to handle all these matters, that for all intents and purposes, it destroys what people refer to as the administrative state. A country this big, a country with as many things that have to be done to protect the public, demand the need of administrative agencies. Republicans have been trying to destroy the administrative state since Roosevelt and the Big Deal. And this case may be the end of the administrative state and their ability to enforce through their own agency courts or hearing boards to enforce their rules and regulations, which carry the weight of statute if Congress does not overturn them. And Congress still has the ability to overturn the rules and regulations set out by these agencies. It is more likely than not we are probably looking at a 6-3 decision against the Chevron case and to overturn the Chevron case and its permissibility, the permissiveness that it creates. And it's going to affect every single agency, the EPA, the Department of Labor. It may even affect agencies such as the IRS, who has its own tax courts. Okay? This is going to be a horrendous decision, which is going to throw this country into even more upheaval. People should be aware that it's coming. And when they vote for their congressmen and they vote for their senators, they, and if they vote for Democrats, these agencies who will do everything they can to avoid dismantling themselves will now be able to have Congress, if there are Democrats who are in control, reinstate some of these agency controls by fixing the problem that is described in the opinion and fixing it in a way that everything becomes constitutional again. So people have to pay attention to this. They have no, they think, oh, this is great. We're going to get rid of all these agencies. It is not great. It is not great. It is horrendous. Because the only solution to it is Congress adopts all these regulations as statutes and then expands the courts by tenfold to create enough judges to handle the load that normally goes to administrative agencies. And it'll cost far more than it costs to run the agency. So I'm highly recommending that people pay very close attention to what's going to happen in the in that situation. So we can talk about the Comstock Act if you want to. But if you've got some questions for me, I'm more than happy to take them. I know you've been sitting there very quietly trying to get over your coughing. You feel like talking now?
Yes. Okay. I'm just overwhelmed by the position that we're in, and I still can't grasp how we got here. It just seems to be that the cult figure in Trump has commandeered the discourse, and I don't know how we can get back to a viable demeanor in the country. Or if we're at a point where we're ripped apart and that we'll never be able to come together again. I see a diminution in the country, and barricades all over the place. I don't know how we're going to eclipse all of this if we ever can. It's very frightening to me.
We have gone through political crises in the past, and I understand, and I've heard from you and others, this feeling of hopelessness, this feeling of dread, this feeling of inevitability.
Yeah.
I'm a true believer in this. I think like Lukovich, in the context that if Donald Trump is the candidate, Donald Trump is defeated, which I believe he will be, that's cutting off the head of the snake. And without that singularity that I talked about earlier, I believe that the Republican Party will disintegrate into all of its factions, uncontrollably disintegrate. And in the context of being so divided like that, it seems impossible for them to win any national election in the foreseeable future. I think Republicans, real Republicans, see that. They see that if they got rid of Donald Trump, yes, they will suffer for a while, but they will not be thrown into the heap of history, okay, as resistors. They will become part of the renewal. I really, truly have to believe in that. I have to believe that there are more people who believe in the Constitution than don't. There are more people. But to the same extent, remember, I have been preaching about education for how long on this show? And
forever.
Even before with you. Okay?
Yeah.
That the basic problem in the United States is the lack of education of our younger people to history, the lack of education to civics, and learning how to be a good citizen. We don't teach that anymore. And because we don't teach it, they don't understand the import of what's going on. They just don't. And they need to understand it. I'm not going to get up on my soapbox about that today. I'm not going to go into all the intricacies of it or who's to blame. That's maybe for a future show. Again, forever. Okay, how about every week? But the truth of the matter is that it is just a lack of education, a lack of being taught the responsibilities of a citizen. They don't want to be responsible for the country. They want someone to tell them what to do. And so they back the guy that says, I'll take care of it all. Don't worry about it. You don't need to get involved. Says, I got this. Okay? I alone can fix it. Okay, remember those words?
Yeah, I do.
They're repetitions of Hitler, but they were spoken by Donald Trump. I alone can fix this. And he truly believes it. So I understand your discomfiture. I truly do.
Do we have enough
children
time?
And grandchildren. What?
Yeah. Do we have enough
Say
time
again?
To re-educate or to educate the nation? Somehow has gone beyond learning?
Let me just say that
very
it becomes
little...
It's a question of dominoes falling.
Uh-huh.
The first domino is Donald Trump is defeated in November. The second domino is that Democrats, because of Donald Trump and the vote that comes out against Donald Trump, the Democrats take control of the keep control of the Senate and the House, but take control of the House, and they expand that control. When they do, they pass laws that expand education. Republicans will disintegrate and become not even a substantial party of resistance to the change that needs to be made. And then we start making the change to educate people. We make the change to make them want to make the country better because it's better for them. Confidence grows. And that is starting to grow now. When that confidence grows to the crescendo it was in the 60s and the 70s and the 50s, that's when things change. But it's dominoes falling one at a time.
Well, you evidently see the future. before I'm able to recognize it. So I hope you're right, because I think
that may not be the future. That's
balance.
A hope for the future. That's a
yeah.
hope for the future. It's not the future.
Okay? Uh-huh.
It really is.
Okay.
So, okay, well, it's 11
so we're in
o'clock
a very precarious situation.
Yes, we are. We are on the precipice, and we literally can
yeah.
lean to the left, metaphorically, lean to the left and climb more, or lean to the right and fall.
Yeah.
It's that simple. I can't make it more succinct than that. I really can't. So, you know, and I just, you know, I hope that those who are not truly off to the right, who are playing with people to the right, understand the fear that they should feel. Okay? And we'll see what happens. That's all. We'll see.
Well, let's hope there's a new horizon that comes
yep.
out of this situation. Well, as
yep.
as usual, thank you very, very much for your input, and we'll see where we go.
It is
so,
always my pleasure. Hezzy, I enjoyed doing the show with you. We should have Brendan back next week.
Yeah.
And we'll see what happens after New Hampshire, and we'll see what happens with the opinion from the D.C. Circuit. Very important
right.
stuff. Okay?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So thank you very, very much. All the best.
My pleasure, and thank you. You take care of yourself. I'm looking forward to hearing from you next week, okay?
You do the same. Thank you so much. Be well.
Take care, my friend. All right, you
thank
too.
You.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay. Well, there we are. Let me put this on hold for a moment. 1 second. All right. Got this. Bear with me a second as I put these things together. One moment here. All right. I think we've got some of these things in place. And we'll be able to move on in a moment. 1 second here. Well, let's cover some international news that you may find of interest, and we'll see what goes on. So bear with me a moment. Okay, we'll find out in a moment here. I'm trying to find my place here. 1 second. All right, let's see. See if we could find our place. Bear with me a moment. All right. Okay, let's hear the latest news coming out of the Middle East. The Israel-Hamas war. Seems the Israel Defense Forces report the highest daily troop loss. This is published about 8 hours ago. Israel has reported the highest number of soldiers killed in a single day in Gaza. Meanwhile, the United States and the United Kingdom have again launched strikes against Iran-backed Houthi rebels in Yemen. So, an hour ago, the United States and the United Kingdom say they both seek no confrontation with the Houthis. Rishi Sunak, the British Prime Minister, stressed the United Kingdom was, quote, not seeking a confrontation, quote, unquote, with the Yemeni Houthi rebel group. But if necessary, the United Kingdom will not hesitate to respond in self-defense to an act called Parliament on Tuesday. We cannot stand by and allow these attacks to go unchallenged. He was speaking.
1 second.
Okay. He was speaking after the United States and Britain conducted a new round of strikes on Houthi targets to degrade the Iran-backed group's ability to attack ships in the Red Sea. Rishi Sunak also announced plans to introduce sanctions against the Houthi rebels in the coming days. We're going to use the most effective means at our disposal to cut off the Houthi financial resources where they are used to fund these attacks, Sunak told Parliament. He added that the United Kingdom was working closely with the United States. The British Prime Minister also announced that British Foreign Secretary David Cameron would visit the Middle East region this week. Well, 4 hours ago, Israel's defense minister said that the latest troop losses are a heavy blow. Israeli defense minister Yoav Gallant said the loss of 24 soldiers on Monday, deadliest day of the ground war in Gaza for Israel forces, was painful. Difficult news that we received yesterday, the deaths of 24 of our fighters, our best sons, who came from the whole country, from the north and from the south, from all places, is a heavy blow, Kalan said in a statement issued on Tuesday. The United Nations says, said about 5 hours ago, very little food aid is available in Gaza. Well, the World Food Program, WFP, has said only a very limited amount of food aid has made it beyond southern Gaza since the start of the conflict. The United Nations body said there is a real risk that some parts of the Palestinian enclave will see famine. It's difficult to get into the places where we need to get to in Gaza, especially in northern Gaza, said Abia Itefa, a world WFP spokesperson for the Middle East. Very little assistance has made it beyond the southern part of the Gaza Strip. I think the risk of having pockets of famine in Gaza is very much still there. Itefa said there was a systematic limitation on getting into the northern part of Gaza, not just for the World Food Program. That is why we're seeking people becoming more desperate and being impatient to wait for food distribution because it's very sporadic, she said. One moment. Okay. Okay, so I guess that's about it, to be honest with you. Tomorrow, hopefully I'll be better, in a better state of mind, and we'll go on from there. So all the best, and we will be able to I'm just not quite sure
things will resolve themselves by tomorrow. So all the best, and hopefully you'll be able to join us then.
Take care and be well. Thank you so much.